Have you ever played Dungeons & Dragons? I don't expect you to say yes, to be honest. I also won't wait for you to answer. I'm sorry, not sorry. I remember playing D&D with my friends in, well, okay, let's say high school. And an important part of our game revolved around our characters hanging out in a tavern. It was the place we kicked around in between quests. It was our home base. Back to the real world. Indy Hall, as it appears right now, is really just one version of something we've been doing for a very long time. Prior to having a location, before we signed a lease, we kicked around in a tavern. It's called National Mechanics. And, okay, it's more of a bar restaurant. In this chapter, we visit the place where we hung out before we had our very own front door, the first version of our home base. And it's important to note that this is not a story about space at all. It's a story about the people who invited us in, the relationships we built with them. Let's get on with it. Here's a phrase you hear almost every day around here. I'll see you at National Mechanics. The First 10. Chapter 5. Becoming regulars at a watering hole.
As a kid, do you remember getting into a swimming pool and sort of paddling through the swimming pool with a couple of friends all in the same direction to try and turn the swimming pool into a whirlpool?
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, of course, yeah.
So you're trying to turn this sort of still body of water into something that's got a current of its own. I actually had a neighbor growing up who had an above-ground pool that was the right size. Like, it was bigger than the little plastic thing that you'd sit in the backyard, but it was, you know, it was a real-sized pool. And it was the size where, like, three or four of us could actually create enough current that if somebody stood still, like, lifted your feet up off the floor of the pool and sort of, like, let the current carry you, you would move.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's too big of a pool, that's impossible.
Yeah.
Too small of a pool, that's impossible. There's like a just the right size. And I think the partner story that we're in right now is that just right size. There's a few dozen people that are more aware of each other than average. And there's an above average awareness that that group of people even exists because we're participating in stuff together out in the world.
Yeah. And actually, similar to the whirlpool anecdote, I remember when I was a kid and you see kids doing that in a pool and you just kind of like, okay, I guess I'm going to join them.
Yeah, because like, you want a whirlpool. Everybody wants a whirlpool.
Right. Oh, I see what you're doing. I'll just fall in line here. Yeah.
Right. What's interesting about that is that's a spot where it's not really clear, like, well, what's next? What's the transition point? And so we've got, you know, how do we go from that sort of sense of activity to something that's got a little bit more permanence to it? Mm-hmm. Something that is on demand to a degree. We're able to sort of create this experience and people can dip in and dip out, but where do you go to sort of pick up where things left off if there's not a concrete event going on right now? Like, having to plan an event just to have people over, it's like needing to plan a 10-course meal just to have a friend come over and have a conversation. It's just like disproportionate effort for the work.
Yeah. And the last time that we talked, you also mentioned that people were kind of volunteering the place that they wanted to get together. In the example of a cream cheese session, you know, somebody would say, hey, we should go over my way and work together. But if no one was willing to do that, or maybe the same person is doing that over and over again. Was it that kind of situation?
There's sort of two perspectives to remember when you're building momentum as a community. The first one is that for the people that are in it, anything repetitive will start to feel repetitive, right? There's a fine line between a ritual, like we've talked about before, cream cheese sessions being a great example,
and
of that,
doing the same thing over and over,
and something being repetitive. So you come up with new, you know, ways to improve it, always build on top of it. Or I think a less effective version is because they're bored, they scrap it and try something entirely new instead of building on what they've already created. I think we were really diligent about constantly building on what we created. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that we did that was exactly what you just described, was how are we choosing places to do cream cheese sessions? Well, we were basically picking people's favorite cafes, favorite places to hang out, each other's living rooms and things like that. But there was no place for us to go if there was an unplanned event and feel like that would be a place where I'm probably going to run into other people in this community. And that started to change when we met the folks who run National Mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
National Mechanics, at the time of our story, was a brand new bar and restaurant.
Yeah.
And I had heard through the grapevine that not only was it new, but it was owned by some folks who were web people. They made stuff on the internet like I did. I thought, well, maybe they'd be interested in what we do, but I don't have anything to sell them. Like, I don't have anything to pitch them.
Yeah.
But we do have this sort of regular gathering of people working together during the day. Maybe we could go there the same way we were going to these cafes. They've got web stuff. Maybe they have Wi-Fi. I don't know. And so I went on their website and I saw that they were closed during the day on weekdays. So basically, brand new restaurant, only open for dinner and drinks in weekday evenings and weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot an email into their the email address that was on the website. And I said, hey, my name is Alex Hillman. And over the last 6 months or so, I've been bringing together a group of people who work in different kinds of freelance jobs or remote jobs and different kinds of technology and creative. One of the things we've been doing is finding places for us to work together instead of working from home by ourselves. I saw you guys just opened, and I don't know if this is something that would get in your way, but it would be really cool if we could actually work from your restaurant during the day. I know that there's not a lot we can offer other than a captive audience at happy hour.
Yeah.
If this sounds interesting, let me know. I'd love to meet you. I'd love to set up a date and time. If you have any questions, let me know.
Did you have an expectation, or did you think like, well, I'm just stabbing in the dark?
It was a total stab in the dark.
Because you didn't know the people who were running National yet.
I had zero personal relationship. I didn't know anybody's names. I just heard the name of this bar. And yeah. I'd heard a little bit of, like I said, folklore that there was some web development people involved. It was a company called WebLink that had actually been in the city doing web development for 10 years prior to that.
Which is impressive at
that
time. Yeah,
and so if this is 2006, that means they were doing web development in like 1996, which is which is crazy.
Yeah.
What came back was really interesting was essentially a yes. It was we don't have Wi-Fi for the bar, but we do have Wi-Fi for our office upstairs. There will be some staff coming in before the restaurant opens, but I think we can pull it off.
Wow.
That was it. It's, I mean, it sounds like insanely easy, but again, all I did was describe exactly what we were. I didn't describe what we're gonna be. I wasn't making big promises. The promise I made was, if you let us show up, and if people show up as they have been,
yeah,
there's a pretty good chance those people are gonna want beer at 5 o'clock. That's not insane.
Yeah.
That's not, oh, if you give us free space, we'll give you promotion. It wasn't any of that.
Yeah.
It was just, hey, we're a nomadic group looking for a place to be. There's a way that this could be beneficial to you. Here's how it's beneficial to us. If you're in, let me know.
At the time, did other people who do cream cheese sessions with you know that you had approached, or I shouldn't even say approached, that you just sent an email out to those guys?
Yeah, I think that bit of folklore that I knew about National Mechanics and its existence, for that matter, actually came from, whether it was from Panama or other people through the community. Like, I didn't just pull that out of the ether. It was, I was talking to all kinds of people and listening all the time for new things. And it's not absurd to think that a web development company opening a bar and restaurant might be on the ears of people in the local web development community,
yeah,
even if that company didn't have a huge presence, right? So what transpired is really all I have already described. We found a date. I announced on our discussion list, hey, we're doing another cream cheese session with the folks from WebLink and National Mechanics. They're going out of their way to set us up with Wi-Fi. If you can, it would be really cool to plan to stick around afterwards for happy hour, yeah, as a way to say thank you. Sort of in that interaction, in that exchange of initiating really like a relationship. It wasn't that I was trying to get anything out of them, or nor was I really offering much more. So it was like, hey, you know, we're doing this thing. It seems like we could get to know each other through this.
Yeah.
That there was a spark there. We want to make Philadelphia better. I think that was the heart of it. And, you know, it's a family-owned business that is in Philadelphia by choice, growing a company, and just went through this very interesting transition where they outgrew their office in another part of the city, very intentionally moved to Old City to buy this building where they were able to put their office on the top floor. And the building previously was a string of really, really, really terrible bars.
I know that one of them was Coyote Ugly.
Not just a Coyote Ugly, but an unlicensed Coyote Ugly is what I understand. It was like they used the brand and sort of the theme, but it was not an official thing. Like the one in Austin's an official Coyote Ugly, for instance.
Well, that's funny, but it's also interesting to me because I have to imagine at the time, people see the building, they're not familiar, the bank building that National Mechanics was now settled into, that you were striking up a relationship with the owners. People had to have had some opinion.
So most of the people that had been in Philadelphia for any amount of time, and remember all the way back to the beginning of our conversations here, a big challenge in Philadelphia is that the prevailing culture is one driven by people who have been here for a long time.
Yeah.
So those people think of this building, and for the most part, they think of this long string of seedy, trashy bars, there was a goth / metal club called Revival forever. Everyone, it's before my time in Philadelphia, but everyone I've ever met who's in Philadelphia in like the late 80s into the 90s knew of Revival and has stories that they're unwilling to tell on the record. So that's the association people have with this building if they've got one at all. But other than that, like from the street, this is like every other brand new bar restaurant that would open up in any single neighborhood. What are they trying to do? They're trying to make it known that they exist. Mm-hmm. That's it. And these guys were unique in that they're not veteran bar and restaurant entrepreneurs. They're internet entrepreneurs. They've built e-commerce websites for all kinds of clients. They just find themselves in a situation where the building they bought can be a bar. It comes with a liquor license. And so a little bit more folklore, the story that I've heard is that they said, well, we've always wanted to open a bar. No better time than now to give it a shot. Crunched the little bit of back of the napkin math that said, well, here's how much it's going to cost. And here's how many friends we have. And here's how much we can charge for a beer. And here's the margin on a beer. And here's how many beers our friends each need to drink in order for this to break even. Can we do it? Let's give it a go. Oh. I think it was a little more calculated than that in reality, but this was not a sure thing.
Yeah.
You know, the restaurant was an experiment. And the nice thing about the setup that they had was their worst case scenario was the restaurant fails, they focus on growing Weblink, and they just take over the ground floor and make that their office. That's not the worst case scenario I could possibly imagine.
I think it's important that you are actually well-versed with the Hills' perspective, right? The fact that they had a story, they had a mutual gain in inviting you and the cream cheese group inside. It seems to me like you were interested in making sure that you offered them something that they would be a part of, not just something that they would, you know, like host vacantly.
I think you're right. My proposal to them was an unfinished proposal. It was not, hey, we're going to do this thing and we need a place to put it. It was, hey, we're doing this thing and we're figuring it out. If it's something we could do together, if it's beneficial to you and beneficial to us, we can figure out ways to do things together. And you know, maybe this leads to more happy hours and other events in your space. I don't really know. Like I said, I didn't focus on making promises so much as looked for ways to understand what it is that they wanted to do as a new business, but also sort of a new contributor to the community. I think if I look back through all of the organizations, the businesses, and the individuals we've collaborated with, the theme through all of them is they're just trying to make wherever it is that they are better, whether it's a specific building or a neighborhood or the city at large. That's the common theme, is I'm always looking for business owners who want to make Philadelphia better. And then it just comes down to coming up with ways that the thing that we want to do and the thing that they want to do become one and the same. Mm-hmm. So in this case, it was, you know, I know now in hindsight, again, then total stab in the dark, although I think my instincts being as good as they are, I could have gone to any bar in the city and been like, nah, it's not worth it. But there was this connection, you know, they're a web company. I think we get it. I think we both get that there's more for the creative community in Philadelphia than what we have now. We can be doing better.
Yeah.
And I think by making that such a big part of our message and also showing up with a track record, I've already got a group of people that are already coming to these things that helped a bunch. The thing that I guess I didn't know or know to expect was that they had been looking at other organizations and ways to run events and basically ways to get people in the door. They were actively looking for people to open their doors to host, but they were feeling underwhelmed by the promises that were being made. Either they were those outsized but empty promises that often get made, or the organizations were just not really, they didn't see how this was going to make things better. So years later, I think Jason forwarded me the email between him and Darren and Paul in sort of their back channel conversation about my original outreach, where they looked at it and said, his group, referring to me and Indie Hall, is actually a lot further along than I realized they were. Looks like a really good thing for Philadelphia. I'd love to give them a shot.
Oh, that's really cool. How long ago did you, or at what point in time did you have access to that back channel conversation?
Years later. Yeah. Years later. It was more of like, I think it was me and Jason talking at happy hour or at one of their holiday parties.
And he just showed that
and
to you.
And he's like, you know, I was digging through my email and I found this thing and I think it'd be really funny. I'll forward it to you. It was a lot of that. And you know, that's one of the fun things about having a lot of that stuff in written dialogue is you can dig that stuff up.
It's archive.
But what I just said now is a little bit of a flash forward into, you know, not the next chapter, but several chapters down the road where these guys weren't a host. This wasn't a host venue. This became a symbiotic relationship between Indie Hall and National Mechanics. Not necessarily the businesses, although the businesses certainly benefited tremendously, but the people. One where our crew got to know their bar staff, their wait staff, got to know first name basis with everybody. And vice versa. It was very quickly and completely as a result of just showing up on a regular basis. It was completely the case that you could walk into National Mechanics most evenings of the week and find at least a couple of people from this still kind of scattered, swirling Indie Hall community there, whether they were grabbing a bite, whether they were having a drink to talk about an idea or decompressing from an event they just went at. That became the de facto hangout. National Mechanics was sort of, it was somewhere between Cheers and church. and read into that as much as you care to. But the fact is that having a place where people in your community know to go makes some really, really interesting things possible.
Prior to that, you just had your Twitter, basically. I think based on our last conversation, you had to be watching that Twitter to find out what was happening next with this group of people. And now you have a place that you could pretty literally stumble into.
So the beautiful thing about Twitter and the way we were using Flickr and to a degree the Google group, but less so, is if I think about what a great online community represents, it's an element of serendipity where somebody posts something or does something that I normally wouldn't be in the room for, but I get a glimpse into that. And then I also can maybe join in and add a comment or share a response or whatever it is. In a way, National Mechanics became Twitter in real life.
Yeah.
Where there was that sort of ambient activity. Most of the time, there was people that were there hanging out. It was also a really easy onboard where just having a default place to go. When people say, you know, hey, we're going to get together, you could skip the entire step of where should we get together. Hey, I'm going to happy hour tonight. Everyone can assume we're going to National Mechanics if it's not already said. Of course, you do explicitly want to say it because not everyone knows that yet. But there was a good long stretch where if it was happening, there was a good chance it was happening at National Mechanics unless otherwise explicitly stated.
Sure.
That room being available and that being sort of our first taste of having sort of a clubhouse, a place that was there whether we were there or not, a place that was there whether you were there or not. One of my fondest memories from the early days was I wouldn't always be planning to go to the bar, but I'd walk past National Mechanics, stick my head in to see who's around.
Sure.
And if there's one or two or five or 10 people there, I'm going to go and say hello and have a drink with them.
Yeah.
And that was it. It's sort of like having a corner bar, but in our case, it was for people from all over the city were coming to this bar as their de facto hangout because they knew it was where people ultimately from our community were hanging out, and our community represented the kinds of people they wanted to hang out with, the freelancers, the entrepreneurs, the web people, the creative people. And National Mechanics being National Mechanics and not having all of the baggage of trying to be a restaurant. It was a business. It had to be a business. But they looked at it and said, what are all the things that we always wanted a restaurant to do, but the restaurant would never do? Mm. We'll do that. They did a fair bit of that on their own, but we also had formed a relationship that basically looked like me emailing their manager, Paul, and saying, Paul, I've got a kind of crazy idea for, and then I would say, it could literally be anything. It could be a show and tell. It could be a party. Really any kind of activity that I dreamed up or we dreamed up during one of our community sessions, or we might have even dreamed up at the very bar. And if anyone else has the kind of propensities that I do to talk through goofy ideas with a couple of beers in you, you know how many good ideas you can come up with a beer in your hand.
Yeah.
The beautiful thing is I had a relationship with Paul that let me send him my kookiest ideas, and he'd come back and say, yeah, we can make that work.
Yeah.
From their point of view, it wasn't just appeasing this crazy Alex person who was aspirational to do big things for Philadelphia. It was, well, there's a group of people that already hang out at the bar that are looking for a thing to do. If we make it easy for them to do that, they'll probably invite more friends.
Yeah.
More friends, they sell more drink, they sell more food, and it builds that momentum.
In your opinion, how important do you think it is that you had chosen a bar to be the meeting place?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The fact that it's a bar, and bars have a certain sort of watering hole kind of behavior, certainly helped, but there's no reason why this can't be a cafe. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why this can't be a bookstore. There's no reason why this can't be a comic book shop. There's no reason why this couldn't be a record shop. I think the thing that's in common with all of the kinds of places I just described, and that's by no means an exhaustive list, is they are places for some sort of creative cultural exchange. Mm-hmm. And you may have been to bars where the last thing that you think you saw was creative cultural exchange. But in the workplace, in a lot of places, there is a culture of going to the bar after work, decompressing, swapping ideas, talking about things that we're passionate about. Like, that's built in.
That's the thing that I think is important, because, you know, the creative cultural exchange comes from a place of comfort. And you were already, like you said, you were already at a bar, and people were hanging out in bars regardless because they were comfortable there. So the interactions that were generating there were real and not stifled, it seems.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and going, I don't like to drink and I really hate bars, cool. Where is a place that you feel comfortable having conversations with people who also feel comfortable? The comic book shop, the cafe, the record shop, a music venue, a park. If you're in a place where the weather's nice more often, go in parks. If you live in a beach community, do this on the beach.
Yeah.
I remember early, gosh, it was probably 2009, something like that. I went to a tech conference in Miami Beach and was hanging out with some folks that were really trying to catalyze the creative community in Miami. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about setting up, you know, shared workspaces and all that stuff. And I looked at them and I said, why do people go to Miami Beach? It's because it's nice here. It's really nice outside most of the year. And granted, it's the worst in the dead of the summer. Mm-hmm. And you have air conditioning for that. But for the majority of the year, while it's nasty for the rest of the East Coast and for a good portion of the United States, it's pretty nice here. Why would you focus on creating an office? Why wouldn't you focus on creating like a beach cabana that's got good Wi-Fi and power plugs and a place where people can come and hang? Like, why are you building effigies to the office? Oh, it's a place that none of us like to go to.
Instead of capitalizing on what you've already got.
Right. So the places that you like to go and hang out, pick one. Try a few. More importantly, get to know the owners of these places. You know, the staff and the owners alike are there not just to serve you. They're potential collaborators in what is a bigger effort of creating something that a better reality than what you currently have.
That's a really important piece not to be overlooked, in the sense that a place that encourages you to be comfortable, to be yourself, your like happiest, best self, is a place that encourages you to participate more with a group of people, to share more with people that you don't know yet, or to introduce yourself to people that you don't know yet. So it seems like it's self-sustaining. Having people come to Indie Hall now is walking into a place where people are comfortable and they feel very at home, whereas people coming into National Mechanics are entering into this state of Like, I can let my hair down here and be myself and meet other people who are being themselves and be welcome among them.
As time pressed on and as we continued to make National Mechanics our annex, our home away from home, our number one spot to go for a lunch meeting, our number one spot to go for a happy hour, if it was something we could do there, it was our first choice. Other people started to notice that. And two things happened simultaneously that were really, really important. One was a benefit to National Mechanics and WebLink as a business too, is that more people learned about National Mechanics and more people learned about WebLink. Two local businesses that are now beloved by not just our community, but many communities throughout the city.
Yeah.
They're an institution unto themselves. And I think they've earned themselves a reputation as being the place where if you want to do something that's a little bit offbeat, but for the community and for making Philadelphia a more vibrant place, for making Philadelphia a more thoughtful place, for making Philadelphia a more educated place, then they're probably going to say yes. Because they know it's not a bad thing when somebody else comes along and has a way to pack their bar for the night. The other thing that happened in parallel was we started getting to a point where more people were coming there when it wasn't under our leadership. It wasn't because I sent a post and said, hey, let's meet at National Mechanics. It was because other people started posting and saying, hey, let's meet at National Mechanics, or they would plan their lunch meetings at National Mechanics. We're going to have to go back and do a word count on a transcript of how many times I've said National Mechanics in the last 30 minutes.
Well, that's why over the years, I think there's like always been this short form, like some people call it National, some people call it Mechanics, Johnny calls it Church. I'll see you at Church.
The point that I was trying to make, though, is that that was a very important corner that we were able to turn. I didn't need to be the bottleneck. I've never wanted to be the bottleneck. I think some people want to be the bottleneck and they struggle and suffer as a result. And if that sounds like you, I think the next few chapters in particular are going to be especially valuable for you, because it's all about how you look for opportunities to remove yourself as the bottleneck, but still provide a ton of value. And that's what National Mechanics provided, probably the first time, the easiest ability for me to do in the most visible way. If we go back to the beginning of this conversation, that sort of whirlpool metaphor that I was talking about, the whirlpool is now moving faster. There's more people in the pool than ever before. Most of them are going in the same direction. You've got a pretty good idea that good things are going to happen next.